honorable members. With me, I have Commissioner Muyiselo Botha, and I also have the CEO, and I did bring a little more depth into our team also. We have our researchers, BB, and we also have our legal officer, Kerry, one of our award-winning legal officer in the CGE. We're proud of them, very young and energetic. And we also have our Commissioner of Oath, our long-standing and long-serving member, Ukamraj, with us. And what we are going to be doing today, after the invitation, we are going to be tabling two reports from our African Commission on Human and People's Rights. And we're also going to be starting with off the complaint received by the Commission from the Democratic Government Rights Unit here in the UCT. And it's called our a judiciary presentation, the lack of gender transformation in the judiciary. So we'll start with that presentation. Just to also share with our members that there was this report did generate interest from the judges and the magistrates. As a result, we've had subsequent meetings with them. But most importantly, the curiosity was, why are we even in that space as the Gender Commission? I just wanted to lay the fears of the judiciary and everyone who might think that we are interfering, that in terms of our constitution on the appointment of judicial officers, the need for the judiciary to reflect broadly the racial and gender composition of South Africa must be considered when judicial officers are appointed. And I'm quoting clause 174 of our chapter 8 in terms of the judiciary. And that is why the Gender Commission actually took this complaint, and it became one of those serious and important reports to table. Thank you very much. So as we here, the CGE is currently engaging with the universities on gender transformation. For today and tomorrow, we are having our legal hearings on gender transformation. We have the University of Free State and Stellenbosch in Johannesburg on our head office. So we are doing that gender transformation in the university. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll give over to the CEO and our legal officer for presentation.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Just in terms of how we will follow the report, we're just putting a broad overview as far as transformation issues are concerned. Then we will look directly into the actual report or the investigation report. And look at where we are as far as the numbers are concerned, and give you a little bit of a feel in terms of how we have been faring. I think the Chair has already highlighted that, you know, in some quarters we have actually received positive responses, but we will also highlight what engagements we've also had on this particular report as far as departments are concerned. I think as we are aware, and as the Chair has highlighted just now, that even today we have gender transformation hearings. The CGE has been engaged in this processes in terms of initiating quite a number of transformation hearings, and we've been doing it both for the public and the private sector. And obviously the focus of our transformation hearings has been to ensure that we get the accounting authorities to account on issues pertaining to transformation within the workspaces. The nature of these hearings is such that we consider a full spectrum of transformation in the workplace, and we try and ensure that we assess compliance as far as gender-related legislation and policies that we have in the country are concerned. The hearings also specifically looked at whether we have measures put in place to try and deal with some of the systemic structures that we are having, which actually inhibit when women and people with disabilities from being included in some of these decision-making positions. It is our view as the Commission that there are factors that contribute to poor representation of women in any particular sector, and these factors include, amongst others, patriarchal structures which perpetuate a paternalistic approach to appointment and work environment, the prevalence of sexual harassment, but to mention a few. And these barriers impede the advancement of women in the form of outdated policies and proper implementation of new policies. We, as we know, the judiciary is also part of our society, and therefore, as a microcosm of our society, it is also not immune from some of these patriarchal manifestations that we have just highlighted. The patriarchal notion that a woman's personal life and family is just more in terms of having children, and that having children will in turn affect work performance, and also, you know, arguments that demands of the work will affect a woman's life are still very common as we engage on some of the hearings. And it is our belief as the Commission that any driven individual, regardless of gender, will rise to these occasions and aspire to the success of the aspects of all their lives. Arguably, this duality in women's lives can actually be an advantage that makes women more suitable for leadership roles. What can make the difference, though, is having the right support structure to enable women to be able to do this. And I think as we delve into this particular report, members will also see the stance that we have also taken as the Commission for Gender Equality as far as ensuring that we give support, we actively nominate and engage with candidates that are to be interviewed for some of these particular positions. This is precisely the rationale of conducting transformation hearings in public and private sector. The failure by any sector to put measures in place to address some of the problems that we highlighted results in women being underrepresented within the workspaces. And it is therefore imperative that international intentional commitments are made in the judiciary, probably as well the legal fraternity as a whole, in order for us to be able to address this. We take into account that as much as the report is looking strictly into the judiciary, but the judiciary also forms part of the broader structure as far as the legal fraternity is concerned. And what we see within the judiciary is also what is more represented in terms of the legal fraternity as a whole. The judiciary transformation is not just in terms of getting women into the seat, and this is what we have also seen, and this is part of the work that we are doing, separate from, you know, this actual report. I think members would also be aware, I mean, we always see, matters or cases being ventilated in court, and many a times we see specific engagements or substantive, you know, when substantively matters or cases are being engaged with, we then see some comments and all the other things that are coming out, which actually highlights patriarchy or patriarchal arguments in themselves or patriarchal approaches in some of these matters. I think not so long ago, and it's one of the things that we've been looking into, you know, you find where there's a rape case that is taking place in a courtroom, and there are arguments in a courtroom to say, you know, it wasn't penetration, you know, it was just hymen removed, and therefore, you know, it's not so bad, you know. So those are also the kinds of things that we are now taking interest into as the Commission, and as we monitor our cases, we also look into those things, and then we kind of try and package them to ensure that the Office of the Chair takes them forward with the Chief Justice. The empirical masculinity of the men of law in the form of lawyers and judges has led to calls by some feminists for gender representation of women in the profession and as well in the judiciary. So, coming back into the actual report, as the chair has indicated, we had a complaint of the commission from the Democratic Government and Rights Unit here in Cape Town and Sonke Gender Justice Network. Obviously, we looked at it from the perspective of what is encapsulated in Section 174 of the Constitution, which highlights that appointment of judicial officers must be able to broadly reflect the racial and gender composition of our population. This particular complaint led to the detailed report that we have lodged with this particular parliament, and there have been quite a number of recommendations that have been highlighted. Chair and members, I will not get too much into the actual framework. The members are aware of our constitution as far as the work that we do as a commission. And as we were doing this particular report as well, we further also looked into some of the international framework that is there, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the CEDAW, Vienna Declaration, the Beijing Platform. I'm not going to get into that. And of course, now we have Sustainable Development Goals that also give us a sense of what are the kind of things that we must be doing and looking for under Goal 5 if we want to achieve gender equality. And also, obviously, our own SADC protocol as well. There are specific things that are in some of the articles in the SADC protocol that speaks to representation of women, participation in some of the courts and all the other areas. And of course, we have our own constitution in terms of these things. So I'm not going to be getting too deep into those things. In terms of the institutional analysis, I mean, it has been widely reported that women are not adequately represented in the legal profession and in turn within the judiciary here at home in South Africa. And when you look at some of our periodic reports as well, our CEDAW periodic reports, the reports that we prepared as a country and put before the CEDAW committee, this has been highlighted. That shortcoming has also been reflected there. And even in some of the shadow reports that some of our NGOs are doing on the ground. As such, it must be pointed out that a meaningful transformation, and here we're looking at this broader sense, has been slow within the legal profession as a whole. Men still dominate the top positions in the profession. If you look into the law firms and all that, senior partners of law firms, senior counsels that we have at the bar, and senior members of the judiciary. Obviously, we broadly, if we also look into the private and in private practice, it's all men. And it's all men, and many a times it's white men that occupy these particular positions. When we look into the 2013 South African Legal Fellows Network survey, the report that came out of that survey shows that South Africa's major corporate law firms are still dominated by white men, especially in its upper echelon. In the large firms, Canvas, as we were doing this, 80% of chief executives were white men, as were 72% of the managing partners of those particular firms. While judiciary may have looked to have done better than the profession at large in changing its racial profile, the color, the same is not entirely true for changing the gender composition of the judiciary. We have observed as we're doing this work that over the past 20 years, the number of women on the constitutional court, for instance, and in the high court, has relatively been very, very poor. This lodged complaint obviously concerned an intricate and multifaceted and interrelated issues, which obviously delve into our own history as a country, history that is deeply rooted in the segmented past that belies our country. The aforesaid interrelated and complicities that we have as far as this matter was concerned and had, you know, forced us as the Commission to sort of deploy a number of multi-pronged or multifaceted approach in understanding the issues and causes which may hamper a truly reflective judiciary. So in terms of the process that we followed, we had to then follow quite a number of processes just to ensure that we come up with this particular report. We had a complaint that was lodged. We engaged with quite a number of respondents as were cited. From the top of the pinnacle, the president and all the various ministries concerned, and obviously we also took to observing judicial service commission interviews and having meetings with them as well. We've also had to seek and get information from other key stakeholders. We have had a specific opinion also done from one of our constitutional law experts, and then we then got into looking into all the inputs and putting all the inputs together and then coming up with a final report that you see on the table. CG's investigation process yielded key insights into the hindrances to the gender paucity on the bench. And if you look at some of those things that have been highlighted, it's lack of certainty of the Judicial Service Commission procedure and criteria thereon, lack of criteria or process in selection of acting judges. You know, if for you to be able to serve in the judiciary, one of the things that you need to have done is to have access. And what we see is the fact that the judge presidents in all the different courts do not necessarily have a specific process that they follow, a process that says, you know, these percentages and all that as far as appointing of acting judges is concerned. Inaccessibility of venues utilized by the JSC, these are some of the things that we saw as we were trying to observe and look into some of the issues. Obviously, patriarchy and sexism, which continue to persist, requires women to prove themselves in this male-dominated profession. I mean, we've had the liberty to speak to some of the judges as well. The finger-pointing by a key stakeholder as to who bears the ultimate responsibility. At a point when we were writing letters to all the various departments and units, we saw, you know, justice would say JSC, ASC, somebody else, and so there was that pointing of fingers that we also picked up. And as well, some of the responses were also saying availability of women or their willingness to be available for the appointments and some of the certain judicial positions was also a problem. Looking into the findings, we've seen that lack of gender transformation is not only applicable to permanent posts, but it was also reflected in appointing acting judges. The information submitted to the Commission shied away from the barriers, behavior, and some of the unwritten rules of the profession that in a way impede talented individuals from progressing. And these barriers, which are often caused by rules, practices, and attitudes about women, are stereotypical and hateful, occur throughout the lifespan of the legal career. The stark reality is that without addressing the institutional culture, gender transformation at the highest echelon of the legal profession will not be attained. And in order to overcome such systematic concerns, debate and active participation is required. So there is a need to have a lot of engagement with quite a number of stakeholders within in looking at some of the issues that we have. Transformation in the judiciary requires transformation of society, attitudes, perceptions, and gender norms and discrimination. Requires transformation of legal fraternity, looking beyond the numbers. Institutional culture, looking at the issues of substantive versus formal equality. sexist perceptions and behaviors as far as male members are concerned, experience and exposure opportunities for women, training and mentoring interventions needed for aspirant women judges, and perhaps we should look into having quotas for briefing women at the bar, and support for women as a whole, which are some of the things that we normally look into, looking into ensuring that we do away with sexual harassment. We have specific facilities in our workspaces that will then be able to support women that are aspirant to be or aspiring to be judges. The kind of interventions that we require as far as JSC and acting judging appointment processes is concerned, one of the things that we are conversing is perhaps to have a transparency in the process and have a standardized criteria. Nomination support and profiling of women must be done. Criteria for selection, shortlisting, sifting, addressing competence and experience versus potential. Monitoring and challenging bias and discrimination within the JSC engagement in interview processes. And perhaps we should have a conscious policy and ensure that the Chief Justice has a specific directive perhaps to judge presidents in this court to then give them a sense to say you're acting, when you appoint acting people, these are the quotas and this is what you should be looking for. So it's some of the things that we are willing to ventilate with some of the stakeholders. And also to get appropriate policy framework in place. And propose to Justice and JSC that they also probably must have a quota to be put in place when we are doing nominations and shortlisting and whatever. We look at having a quota, not just a quota be given to judge presidents when they appoint the acting, but as well perhaps look into having something like that when maybe appointments and all that is done. Putting in place a mechanism to ensure transparency in advertising, nomination, selection, and appointment processes of judges and acting judges. Perhaps Minister of Justice should also look into, if you have a quota, maybe looking into, you know, sometimes you find a situation where you have so many lists of women that are nominated, but we end up getting a host of men being appointed out of that process. So perhaps we should look into ensuring that we are always getting candidates or women candidates out of that particular process. So flowing from the complaint and the impact of CD's investigation into the complaint, there really has been some substantial gains that we have made towards improving gender transformation. We must highlight since 2012 when we started working on this particular complaint. And one of the things, when we engaged with the JSC, wrote letters to them as respondents and tried to get information, one of the things that they were putting out there was the fact that we don't get people to nominate women. And they actually put a challenge to us as the Commission for Gender Equality and asked us, have you ever nominated? And we actually took that challenge very seriously. And part of what we've been doing over the time is to ensure that we nominate women and we give them, we engage with them and we give them the support that we think they require. So we're very excited as the Commission because we nominated Mayor Mulimel, and she was actually the first black female to be appointed Judge President in the Free State. And so we were quite elated with that particular progress. And so it goes, there's been quite a number of women as well that we've seen being deployed into all the different courts. But obviously, we still need to get there. Adoption of criteria for the appointment of acting judges by the head of court at a meeting that we were held in April 2016. since the criteria permits head of court to consider key aspects when recommending candidates for appointment as acting judges in terms of section 175 of the constitution. And like I said, we have had a spiral of increased nomination, and we've been ensuring that there's formal support for women applicants for judicial vacancies, taking it or leading that particular process as the Commission for Gender Equality. CD's commencement of observing and monitoring the JSC interview processes. So what we have been doing, it was not just to do it at a point when we were doing or looking into the actual report or this investigative process, but we are continuing now as part of our process to ensure that we go out and we look into some of these interviews so that we are able to ensure that there aren't biases as the questions come and all that, and we put reports forward and as far as that is concerned. And with all that information, and then we have had quite a number of recommendations which have prompted engagement with integral stakeholders such as the Department of Justice, Office of the Chief Justice, the Law Society of South Africa, professional bodies for attorneys and advocates, which are key to the advancement of women's equality and representation in the legal sector and the judiciary. And this has further aired issues which are not often spoken about directly or addressed, which then, if they are not engaged with, always leave the status quo intact. And in actual fact, the Women's Legal Center here here in Cape Town have also taken forward, and they've taken this report because as much as we had engaged with the bar councils and all that, we could not do it that much broadly. So what they are doing now is actually to come up with a report that is specifically being done by lawyers. Nadel is the one that is pushing for it. They have engaged with us as well. They are looking broadly now into the legal profession to look into issues of gender equality within the legal profession. Identification of the need for a holistic multi-stakeholder approach and team involvement to address the slow pace of gender transformation and the underrepresentation of women. Greater accountability for the cited respondents in relation to ensuring gender transformation in the legal profession and the judiciary. Commitments made by the CGE to address the slow pace of gender transformation in the judiciary and legal profession, and obviously ensuring that we have media coverage on the outcomes of the investigation. So those were some of the things that were done. I think members will see, we tried to put the numbers now as at 31 March 2017, and then we do have some of the numbers in terms of what has happened previously, but the picture is still there. You see where we are as far as men are concerned, that yellow, orange, and now colorblind, the orange color, that's where our African male are sitting, and obviously you can all see that we still have a lot of work to do as far as the numbers are concerned. I'm not going to look into that deeply. Gender representation of the judiciary at this stage, we have male sitting at about 65% and female sitting at 85% at the stage. And that means we still have a long way to go to ensure that we transform our judiciary. And so it goes. I mean, we also sort of looked into the advocates, because by the way, for you to be able to at some point be recognized as an acting judge within the legal profession, and you look at the Bar Council and all the other societies, and that's the picture where we are sitting. You can see we have our five males quite high in the bar up, and therefore it actually means that there's really a lot of work that still needs to be done. That's the gender representation of the bar. There's a whole sitting at 23% against 27%. And so, because we've had quite a number of ministries and engagements, looking at the Department of Justice, we've been engaging with them, but I must say, we are really disappointed with the lack of response from the Department of Justice, because we've been really engaging and writing quite a bit to try and see how do we take forward some of the findings and some of the recommendations that are in the report. And I think part of what the complainants, as we were engaging with them, were also putting forward is to perhaps let's have a stakeholder, an all-stakeholder engagement, so that we all have agreements in terms of who must do what, taking into account that at the point when we started, there was quite a number of fingers pointing and all that from all the various departments. So we are still trying to engage with justice. We also, obviously, because the first respondent was right at the pinnacle, the president, he welcomed our report. He welcomed the recommendations, and then he indicated that we must now engage with the respective ministers within justice and women. In order to ensure that we take forward some of the recommendations. So we are still trying to, hoping that we'll be able to engage with the said ministers on some of these issues. We are still hopeful that we'll be able to do that. Part of what we also had to do was to put together a discussion document. Each discussion document will form a basis of the meetings and the engagements that we will have with all the stakeholders, and we have a draft out. We've been working very closely with the complainants on this, putting the draft together and engaging and what have you. And we are, in terms of our own processes and the time frame, in the third quarter we should put out that particular draft out there for public comment, so that we ensure that we get more comments and have more engagement broadly within society. Subsequent to the indigenous meetings with the ministers, the CGE will also then be in a better position to then alert the portfolio committee in terms of what is now the way forward after we have conversed and engaged the findings and the recommendations with them. And so, like I've indicated that from the beginning, we still are on course as the CGE in ensuring that we nominate and support female judges in the JSC processes. So we are still actively nominating. About last month, we did quite a number of nominations as well, and we engage with these women and give them the support that is needed. And we still carry on to ensure that we observe the judicial interviews so that we are able to note any gender bias questions that may be put forward. The Commission has further held discussions, as the Chair indicated in her opening remarks, with the Magistrate Commission. And I mean, it was really welcome because they actually approached us after they heard the Chair being interviewed and engaging on SAFM on this particular report and the recommendations. And they then sought and wrote to her directly to say, let's have an engagement, let's see how from the Magistrate Commission now we can ensure that we incorporate some of the issues that you have highlighted. And those engagements came with, you know, us trying to assist them by putting some sort of guidelines in order for them, the things that they should be looking into or doing to ensure that they improve female representation, and as well as retain women that are there already as judicial officers. And the guidelines obviously looked at some of the key policies that we thought they could put in place, reviewed whatever it is that they still have. And obviously we were doing that, taking into account that the Magistrate Commission is not necessarily a designated employer, as is seen by, you know, the normal within the Act, as far as the public sector and the private sector is concerned. So we then looked at what are the kind of things that the practical things that they must put in place, looking into ensuring that there's some sort of training that takes place. And then the training there, we also are trying to push and ensure that there's gender, you know, lens as well on some of these things, and upskilling that could be done, and looking into sensitization on issues around sexual harassment and all the other issues. So, Chair, I mean, yeah, I think it's very clear that really, in order for us to be able to achieve equality within the legal fraternity, there's a need of a collective approach that is required. The journey to deal with patriarchal manifestations will take time, and the Commission, we have vouched that we will be persistent in monitoring and engaging all the relevant stakeholders in order to ensure that transformation is eventually realized. Thank you, Chair.
I'm aware that we have sort of rather conceived, and then we'll be writing down our questions and then have the questions actually.
Yeah, do you have a presentation? Thanks. Chairperson, honourable members, and all other guests, thank you for the opportunity to present on the two ordinary sessions of the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. I attended the first one, and PB on my left has attended the second session. So I will present on both, though. We have the presentation that's being deemed there, but I will deviate from the presentation as we go, just to give you more substantive information. On page one, if you look at the introduction, basically this presentation is based on the two reports as I said, the 58th session and also the 59th session, which was held at Banjul. And during these two sessions, the presentation was done by the South African government, basically the Department of Justice. And as you know, the African Commission convenes twice a year. At the first session, at the 58th session, we were late with our periodic report. In other words, we presented more than one report, which was consolidated into one. And the Commission did voice some concerns on it. And what the sentiment was that we are the big brother of Africa, and other countries want to see how we're progressing and what initiatives we are taking. So they urged us as a country that's a leader in most of the areas that we report on, please report timelessly and continuously. Can you go to the next? Thank you, CEO. It's good to have the CEO doing some work for you today. Thank you. Normally it's the other way around. Thank you.
Careful.
Yes.
Gender.
Yes. Thank you. No such thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. on this slide on page 4, the report highlights developments which took place in the South Africa. I'm sorry, just going to repeat that. The report basically highlighted all the developments that took place over a wide spectrum of areas in South Africa, with emphasis on human rights, and more especially on the areas set out in the Maputo Protocol. What I want to do now is to detract slightly. I want to give you a background so that this presentation will be more meaningful. In other words, what I want to express here is to try and explain why we have the African Commission, where does South Africa fit in the African context, why do we really report here, what we get from the session at Banjul, and how do we work from there as the Commission and as South Africa in general. So this will give you that background and that kind of substantive information. So just bear with me if I'm going to detract from this presentation now. And the reason why I'm doing this is because we don't pay too much attention to our international obligations, because it's poorly understood and it's a very complex area. Now, first thing I want to say here is that in terms of our mandate in Section 11 of the Fiji Act, we are bound, we are obliged to monitor Africa's compliance, certification, and fulfillment of its obligations in terms of all conventions, treaties, and declarations that we've signed. At least I'm quite a few after 1994, so we have a whole lot. And the government has acknowledged that because we have so many of these international obligations, we're not able to fulfill our duties towards it. In other words, to draft the report and to present it to these organizations. So that's becoming a real problem. And the President himself has indicated to the Department of Justice, please, you know, address this problem. So it's just having these instruments being ratified that we can't fulfill our obligations. So it's going to serve no purpose. So the background is basically as a member of the African community, we go back to the OAU, in other words, the Organization for African Unity. Now the Organization for African Unity was established in 1963. And basically the purpose or the objectives of the Organization for African Unity was twofold. When it was signed in 1963, the first objective was to bring unity to the African nation or the African continent. Now, why this was necessary? Because we had lots of colonial powers who ruled over different countries in Africa, and this colonialist Africa was problematic for the African people. So they wanted to bring about unity. That was the first objective. And the second objective of the OAU that was signed in 1963 was to focus on regional integration in Africa, in other words, to strengthen regions and to bring about economic growth in Africa, to bring about development across all spectrums of society, and to reduce poverty. We know that poverty is a huge problem in Africa. And in a recent study that was done, when you looked at the trade, intra-African trade, it was a dismal picture. Within Africa, we have about 55 nations in Africa, and we have highly developed countries like Kenya, we have South Africa and Nigeria. But the trade within Africa is just 17%. Now, when we compare the trade within Asia, it's 64%. In other words, the countries within Asia are trading aggressively with each other, and that's able to address the poverty needs, infrastructure development, and so on. In Asia, the same with the EU. EU is highly developed, we all know that. And intra-European trade stands at 62%. And Africa is still dependent on the EU. So that was one of the reasons for the OAU to establish itself and bring about unity in Africa. And these were the objectives set out by the OAU: to promote the unity and solidarity of the African state. In other words, they wanted to break away from the colonial powers, to coordinate and intensify the cooperation and efforts to achieve better life for the people of Africa. Thirdly, to defend the sovereignty, the territorial integrity and independence. And fourthly, to eradicate all forms of colonialism from Africa. And fifthly, to promote international cooperation, having due regard to the Charter of the United Nations and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So those are the primary objectives. And he found that the OAU failed in its objectives because of the inability of African leaders to work together. And we had the AU succeeding the OAU in 2002, purely because the African desert states felt that they hadn't achieved their targets, and they were quite embarrassed. And then in 1980, we had the Lagos Plan of Action. And the objective of the Lagos Plan of Action was to bring about economic integration in Africa. And what we found was the Lagos Plan of Action, once again, African leaders failed to meet the targets that were set out in the Lagos Treaty. Then we had the Abuja Treaty, which tried to actually undo the failures of the Lagos Treaty. And then we currently have the Agenda 2063. So these are the developments over the African continent. And if you look at Africa today, what we have is that we have various regional economic communities. For example, we have ECDC, which we are part of. We have ECOWAS, which is the Economic Community of West African States. We have the EAC, which is the East African Community, and COMESA, and so on. Okay, these are the regions. And the African Union, which we have today, is trying to bring all these regional communities together. So that's where we are with the African Agenda 2063. Now at this point, we have the picture of where we are as members of the African community. I just want to go now to the 58th and the 59th session, and I'll focus more on the 58th session, what was highlighted there. Basically, there will be 2 seconds. Basically, there were numerous observations made at the 58th session in Banjul. The Department of Justice had a very, very powerful delegation. Just to quickly tell you who were there, we had Advocate J.M. Maluleka, we had the Deputy Minister, we had Ms. Sipol, Mr. Rabu Rabu, Mr. Moveni, Koza, Mr. Singers P, Mr. Flamini, Mr. Manteko, E. King, and Ponko. So it was a very powerful delegation from Justice. The Commission was very pleased with the presence of South Africa and also the initiative taken by the African delegation to try and report over all the previous that failed to report. This is what the Commission had to say. Since it had numerous positive aspects that it was happy with. And first thing it says, the Commission notes a number of positive aspects in South Africa's fulfillment of its obligations under the African Charter and the Maputo Protocol. It commended South Africa, first of all, on the ratification of numerous regional and international human rights instruments during the reporting period. So there were over 16 international instruments that we ratified. Also, they were very happy with the numerous pieces of legislation that we developed. For example, they were happy with the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Act, which changed the definition of rape, because they felt it extended more protection to women in South Africa. Also, the Immigration Act, they were happy with. The other act that they were quite pleased with was the Civil Union Act, which we had passed in 2006, and we hadn't reported on it previously. In terms of economic, social, and cultural rights, the Commission was also quite pleased with the initiatives and the achievements that Africa reported on. And they were very happy with the concept of equal pay for equal value. The Code of Good Conduct was actually presented and dealt with about 2 years ago. So they were quite pleased with that. And I think most countries in Africa hadn't reached this stage in the employment sector. They were pleased with the right to, I mean, initiatives taken to affirm the right to health as well. And they noted the increase in the overall life expectancy rate from 56.5 years in 2009 to 58.5 years. Now this is an indication of the improvement of the healthcare services and initiatives that South Africa has taken. But in terms of civil and political rights, they were also pleased with the enactment of legislation that serves to rule out discrimination and ensure equality in a variety of areas such as race, color, ethnic origin, gender, sex, sexual orientation, and other areas such as disability. In respect of women and children's rights, the Commission commended South Africa on the protection of the rights of women through the enactment of the Energy Laws and Policy. And they looked at the Sexual Offences and Community Affairs Act. It's not the Act, it's the Sexual Offences and Community Affairs Unit in the Department of Justice that deals with specialized crimes that are perpetrated against women and children. They were also quite impressed with the Tutuzela Care Centers because this is a groundbreaking initiative in Africa. They also raised the issue of Kwala and they felt that initiatives need to be taken. And at that stage, the Commission for Gender Equality had approached the Law Reform Commission. And there is initiatives being taken in this area, but the Department of Justice has not reported on that as well. So there were a range of positives that the Commission found in respect of our reports, and I won't go through all of it because it's quite immense and impressive. One aspect that I want to dwell a little bit on was the extractive industries and the environment. Now what the Commission noted was that in Africa there is numerous mining operations because Africa is rich in mineral wealth. And they find that the countries in Africa do not monitor this area adequately. Because they feel that multinationals come into the countries, they disrupt communities, and the wealth that's taken out of the country is not brought back into these communities. These communities are left destitute, and also there are harmful effects to the environment, as well as the social ills that are perpetrated on the communities which dwell on those pieces of land. So they felt that countries in Africa need to pay more attention to that area or that aspect. Now if we take South Africa, they felt that we have very good legislative initiatives that have been initiated. But if you look at the report and you look at the initiatives taken by Parliament itself in this area, and it's quite interesting, and I just want to note this, which was not presented at that time. I won't be long. Now, if you look at what Parliament found on the mines, I just want to read this here. It's the ACC, which was published on the 9th of October. The Bakubeng is a huge underground mine that will last 30 years, employing over 3,000 mine workers full-time, based on over 10 billion investments, mainly raised from Chinese investors. It started production in 2017. Its holding company, Receive, is listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. In 2005, it was 52% owned by black South Africans. Ownership was substantially diluted after 2008. And today the community owns less than 5%. And there are complex and sensitive community disputes over what happened to proceeds from liquidation of shares, some 800 million. So the concern raised by the Commission, the African Commission, is a valid concern. And as the CGE, we are taking initiatives to look at the mining sector. And we have two reports that have been published. And these are our findings. One of the challenges that the CGE noted was women face a number of challenges within the mining working environment which inhibit the chances of reaching top management positions. So in the mining sector, women are excluded. And we know as a CGE that it's a male-dominated workplace. And the recommendation that the CGE has made in this area is for the mining sector to look at the recruitment policies, for it to pay more attention to female employees and their rights, and recruitment should be prioritized. It needs to increase the representation of Indian and coloured women. And and the mining sector needs to draw lessons from good practices of other mining companies within their sector in order to address their shortcomings. So overall, the CG felt that the mining sector needs to develop mechanisms to attract more females and people with disabilities into the industry, and to develop mechanisms to continuously develop women and people with disabilities in this sector. Another concern that was raised by the Commission was the reservations that South Africa signed in 2007 when it ratified the Maputo Protocol. And one of the reservations is that South Africa will not be bound by articles relating to death penalty and also the articles relating to marriage. Now, the CG looked into that already, and we said, look here, there was no need for South Africa to express any reservations in respect of those articles, because in terms of international law, if your domestic law has provisions which are better than those in the international instrument, then of course your domestic law will prevail and you won't have any conflict with the international instrument. So we did write to the Department of Justice to address that. So in terms of our overall recommendation, if you look at the CGE recommendations from what we've brought back from the 58th and the 59th session of the African Commission, our initiatives are in line with the constitutional mandate of the CGE, that is to monitor South Africa's compliance with the international treaties. And the CGE feels that we should incorporate Agenda 2063, the SDGs, and the African Women's Decade, and the 2016 African Year of Human Rights, with particular focus on the rights of women in its plans and strategy. We've done that. And we know very well that what we are doing fits in perfectly with the Africa Agenda 2063 objectives, which is to bring about, you know, greater prosperity to women, to make them more inclusive, to affirm the rights to justice, to affirm the rights in the workplace. So that's being done. Also, the CGE is to focus attention on the participation of women in the mining industry. We've done that. We've got two reports that have been published. Also, the impact of spending on women and gender mainstreaming was highlighted as an important area for research and intervention. It is therefore recommended that CGE embarks on projects that address illicit spending. Next, the CGE must use its constitutional powers to enforce compliance with the relevant gender policies and frameworks within the public and private sectors and hold them accountable. And we are doing this by holding the mining takes accountable the whole judiciary accountable, as you've just heard, we are fulfilling the objectives of Agenda 063. It is finally recommended that the Public Education and Information, which is a PEI department within the PGE, will use its education programs to raise awareness around gender policies with the relevant stakeholders in the mining sector and emphasize implementation of the recommendations made in our 2016 and 2017 report. Yes, the CGE has recommended that the mining sector attend workshops and also revise the policies to be in line with our constitution and our international agreements. So that is being done. Thank you very much.
We are done, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I'll now open the floor for questions or comments.
With regards to transformation in the judicial sector, oftentimes companies will complain that the availability of skilled women is the barrier to transformation. So has the CGE looked at the number of law students versus graduates versus availability of females, particularly black women, and as a kind of comparison to see whether these companies are being, you know, legitimate in their claims or not. Secondly, with regards to the Civil Union Act, we know that there's a case with the High Court here in the Western Cape presently, and that you've engaged in a number of legislations in your presentation to the Human Rights Commission. To whom did you make that presentation, that they were agreeing? Never mind. The point I want to make is, has the CGE been involved in the Civil Union Act to see how it can be improved so that vulnerable women, for example, women in traditional areas who fail to benefit from inheritance, etc., when their husbands pass away, as well as Muslim women who, you know, when their husband divorced them by saying those three phrases again, How are we ensuring that their rights are being protected? I just want to get more information from you guys. And then thirdly, I just want to reiterate a point that I've made in the past. It's all very well that the CGE chooses to focus on the agricultural sector this time and the mining sector next time, but it'll take you years to actually go sector by sector. And what you'll find is a number of the issues that you're finding in one sector will apply generally. So I just want to reiterate again, when you are conducting your planning for research and things like that, please conduct it as a general investigation. Because the quicker we can find the common factors nationally, the quicker we can you can propose to business, you know, whether it's in the private or public sector generally, look at these points within your organization. Even if it's the five most common things, the five most crucial foundational issues that companies need to look at, whether it is providing childcare on site. That will boost productivity. That will ensure that women are included in the workplace and in the economy, which is so essential. As an example, perhaps, you know, providing training programs to capacitate women for leadership. Those are two examples of things that will apply generally in South Africa. But if you go sector by sector by sector, in 20 years' time, we're going to get another report for you and from you, and finally we will see, you know, the breakdown across sector. But the urgency required for women empowerment and the inclusion of them in the economy, we cannot delay. So I just want your comments on that. Can you take a more general approach, identify those common factors, and put out your report to organizations, public and private, across the country to try and speed up this process, because it is crucial? I just want to get clarity from you why you need individuals. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and it's just that I came into the middle of the presentation, but I was just schematically reading on the Commission for Gender Consolidated Report. The unfortunate part is that I don't have the electronic version, so I can't read it at home, so I read it in the meeting because my email doesn't work. The report says on education, I think it's the bigger, this is the bigger copy. That's page 6. It talks about significant steps have been taken to implement the rights of the rights to equality and non-discrimination. And I think I've raised this thing several times, that if a person is not in this meeting or anywhere where this report was written, that person will never know those issues that are significant, that have been taken. Maybe this person doesn't even know those issues, but we were saying that we have reversed the achievements that women have made in the last 20 years. But if a person writes a report, this report was written when? 2017. In 2017, this person still talks about significant steps. I don't know what are these significant steps. And the equality code was that they were also not functional. So, but here it says that equality codes are designated in a number of areas, and these equality codes are not functional. All of us knows, we know that that is the problem. And then it also continues to say that the paragraph on top talks about safety and secure. It says that South Africans, where people are safe and secure in their homes, at home, in the workplace, because we hope to achieve a community life that is free of elements that create fear and harm to any person. But these elements that they're talking about have not been elaborated, and we don't know what are these elements, because women are still raped in their own homes, they're still raped in schools, they're not safe whenever they walk around. But the plan, the NDP plan, says by 2030, but those steps have not yet been started being implemented. Who has to implement those steps? And what are these steps that they are talking about? I don't know them. I'm sitting here in this commission, I don't even know those steps. So let us write reports that are reflective of what is happening on the ground. we go to education, even with the land ownership, it says, the second sentence on the next page, which is page 8, it says land ownership. The right to property and land ownership remains an issue that evokes strong reaction in South Africa because of the difficulties that face a majority. What are these difficulties? Because people take it for granted that those that stays in shacks, they are supposed to be there. Or maybe they are poor. They assume that those that stays in shacks are poor, especially this generation. The new generation thinks that people did not put themselves there. They were forced to stay in those squalor areas. But these are not written here. And when you write this fancy language where significant, difficult, people will never learn, even understand what are the impediments that people are encountering on a day-to-day basis. You go to page 10, it says on 2.2.4, it says water and sanitation. The state reported that significant progress, there's that significant progress comes again. Women in Hammanskraal, I'm not talking about a place that is not even urban. Women in Hammanskraal don't have flushing toilets. But it says, the state report that significant progress has been made in areas of water and sanitation. Some 89% of South African bantu, 89% of South African households. Can we really say this? CGE, because you monitor people that deliver these services. How do you accept a report like this? 89% of women. You still have kids that go to the field in the school. Bantu. 89%. Sanitation in Hammanskraal, it's not there. I don't want to talk about bucket systems. I'm talking about an area where I have a constituency. In Hammanskraal, they stay for 2 weeks these days without water. And then, and it is just a small paragraph. You must remember, this is the majority of the population in South Africa. You go to 2.2.6, the right to education. In your report, which we got last week, I went through it 3 or 4 pages, in that the first few pages talk about the enrollment of girl child to school, and the enrollment has been stagnant at 48%. If you read that report, it says women entrance from grade 1 to grade 12, it's at 48%, and boys, it's at 59, if I'm not mistaken, 59 or 51, but 50, unfortunately. But I still want us, Chair, to bring back that report and discuss the content, because it also says we need to discuss the content of this report so that we can come up with policies that are going to ensure that women are taken care of. That report on education, it's one of the reports I just pulled the book and then put it away, and I said it's shocking, because we have been told in the last 10 years that the enrollment of the girl child has increased. We're not talking about 100% of girls. Still at that 48%, the girl child, even at high and at tertiary level, that girl child, we're not assuring them that they are going to go out of poverty by giving them work when they go out of those so-called skilled employment, still at that 48%. But still at higher education level, it's the girl child is even lower. The statistics still lower on the pass rate. The entrance is high, on the pass rate it's still lower. So there are many impediments, so we need to change policy. When the African Commission makes, South Africa has made improvements, We're still saying women, there are systematic issues that forces them not to get there. You know? So why are we not coming up with policies that are going to help women to be at 100%? If Cuba could do that from 59 to 69, they could eradicate illiteracy at 100%. Why can't we do it? The white woman in that statistics which you gave us last week, the white woman illiteracy is at zero. And the white male is at 0.7. And you must remember, that is the smallest percentage of the population in terms of demographics in this country. So the highest population of demographics, it's at 35% illiteracy. And that's again, look silver. Thank you. 20 years down the line. We're not discussing content here all the time. We're just doing compliance. We comply to reports. Now we have brought in reports, and this is the job we're doing. But the content, the meat is in the content of these pages. And that's what the CG is supposed to present to us, the meat, as I said last week. Tommy reports from scratch. Nisipa, your report, you're not presenting the report. I was so mad last week. No? I switch off the mic. PMC is the reporting. PMG. The institution.
Are you through?
Yeah, Buma.
Next question.
Then I'm going to go home. My kids work. He pays back.
izethulo zenu zinhle ziyancomeka kodwa wami umbuzo nje uthi ke ngibuzeukuthi njengoba nikhuluma lana nje yini eyenza eniyenza ukubhekisisa ukuthi laba bantu besifazane nabesilisa kungani abesifazane uthola ukuthi bayafeyila if befundela something njengazo lezi zinto okunye kwesibili bengizokwazi nike nikubhekeni ukuthi inenzi ukuthi abantu bakithi uma befundela imithetho lena njengayo lo yini eyenza ukuthi bangakwazi ukuphilelela okunye engizofuna la ngabe niyakwazi ukugqugquzela le nto yokuthi nenze show ukuthi from the beginning umntwana usuka phansi lana uya kumetric kodwa useniyamazi ukuthi lo ufundela ummeli nikuze nazi ukuthi bangaki abantu abafundele lo mthetho wala eSouth Africa lokhunywa ngawo lana and nakwi-university nazi ukuthi bangaki abantu ngoba ezinye zezinto lezo funa siyibheke ukuthi especially thina abantu abamnyama ukuthi yini eyenza thina abantu abamnyama babe kancane abantu abakwazi ukungena kulezi zemithetho kanjalo futhi nabesifazane uthole ukuthi akubhalansi ngabe niyakwazi ukuyibheka yonke leyo nto ukuthi imbangela yalezo zinto iyini ngiyabonga
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thanks for the presentation. I only have a few questions to ask. What I'd like to know from GEC is why do females fail when they study law? For you to be able to address this issue of transformation, I just want to find out as to whether are you able to follow learners when they pass grade 12 and be able to encourage them to study law, so that at the end of the day we'll then be able to address the issue of transformation. And also, are you able to trace as to why our girl learners at universities, why do they fail law? Because seemingly the majority are the males. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry for being late, but on this two reports, thank you very much for the reports. But my question is around the issue of the rural areas. Maybe if you can have a report from the CGE around the issue of whether the people in rural areas, do they have able to have the persons or like magistrates who are coming from the rural area, because I know that the level of education in the urban areas as well as in the rural areas is not the same. Whether do you have any statistics related to whether the girl child at the rural area is getting the same education as one in the urban area? And also to say, according to what is happening now, we have traditional leaders, and we have Izindona who are also working there in the rural community. Do those people, do you have any report saying that those people do have qualifications on the law? Because you find that the people, they are being brought to in front of the leadership, in the traditional leadership, because of the certain cases that they have done as perpetrators. And those people are not, some of them are not even encouraged to go, the victims are not encouraged to go to the police station to report their matters. Instead, they are taking those matters to the traditional leaders. As well as in donors, and their cases are being heard by those people. And you find that sometimes they will say, no, this case belongs to the police station, but this one belongs to us. And thereafter, the people are being told that they must pay a certain amount of money as fines. Thereafter, the issues continues, and the people, even they became the... There's also this issue of section 5 in those rural areas, just because of the cases that were not handled rightfully by the traditional leadership. So CGE also have those reports saying that according to justice, these are the reports that are coming from the traditional areas, rural areas, they say no, these are the cases that have been handled by the traditional leaders, but the people there, they were not satisfied by them. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nibonga Slal. Hey, whenever you go to Bengu, what hinting about anything? And the A King of Putte Essays and we talk. Goba, why in time? As the time you talk over, and he born in Vela Vela. If it's Kuluman in Ted. Abona Emma Carlson and King is in Zima. kubukhulu bendabuko njengoba nizwa nje mhlambe nje kunezwa lami kulezi zinsuku nizwa kuthiwa usazi kuphi ngapha ko-Great Town la kuthiwa kuqotheke khona umndeni Great Town kwasha imizi imindeni khuluma ngemindeni isukela kule nto eshiwo Honorable Bhengu because lana kuvele kusuke mhlambe kuxabane imostike emakhaya kuba izinkomo ezixabanisayo kubi njengathi emalokishini okuba yingane emakhaya kuba yimfuyo uthole ukuthi imfuyo yami ihambile ayo ngena layodla insimu yakaBhengu bese kuyahanjwa kuyiwe enduneni induna to phoyisa to induna to enkantolo yesizwe yila kufika khona kusukeke lalezi zimpi ezisho u-Honorable Bhengu thola ukuthi la funa ngikhokhele mina engiyomangala imali yephoyisa funeka kube khona imali yenduna udaba selokhulunywa thothi mase kukhulunywa lolu daba instead ukuthi abalaba bantu baxazulule njengamakomiti lawa khona angawona umkhulu bendabuko njengathi phakathi nje masixazulula kukho la sithi abantu babakhokhe khona bahlawuliswe khona thola ukuthi manje wena uboshiwe kuthiwa funeka ukhokhe imali yephoyisa imali yenduna inhlawulo yokuya enkomo yakho inhlawulo ekhokhwa laphayana angikhulumi ngemali mhlawumbe 1,500 omunye ubaba wayegalela ngoba ezinye izinto njengathi njengoba sihlala lana siyahamba thina siyemphakathini ngokuhlukana kwawo ukuze uthi uma ubuya uza la ekomitini uzokhuluma into enjani oyaziyo omunye ubaba nje walithuli wayegalela dla iy'nyembezi ethi ngihole impesheni ngizoyithathaphi lo mali ngoba iphoyisa ekuqaleni busukuthintile wena-ke ndoni busufuna bethi manje sifuna la athi ngikhona impesheni kwathiwa kayikhokhe imbuzi ilo 1,500 lo muntu uhola impesheni okubuhlungu kunakho konke engazi ukuthi sizobeka kanjani bengiyodinga ngelinye ilanga mhlalo wami omuhle ukuthi ke usibizele ukhokta akezositshela ukuthi yena umi kuphi kule nto esikhuluma ngoba ngeke isenzele ukuthi if ukhokta ngekho lani ngoba kunanezincwadi oniphathela nikhombise ma ufuna incwadi ibhale ukhokta ma ufuna incwadi ye-proof resident mhlawumbe yebhenki uyakuphi ukhokha 100 uyasebenza usebenzi ma ngabe ufuna yonke into yakhona iyimali okubuhlungu umbuzo wami uthi ngoba sebeyahola ugovernment yabaholela and imali abaholela yona inkulu yamali u-7,000 bengi-understanda ngaleso sikhathi sakudala why manje sebekhokhisa abantu yilezi-ke iy'mbangela iy'ngane zami sihlalo wami omuhle okubona ekugcineni uzokuthiwa emakhaya kuliwe emakhaya makuliwe akuyona lento yepolitiki mhlawumbe ngithethe phathaphatha kwalandela omunye futhi umosi washa futhi yini uphuma umuntu athi kulungile ngizoyikhipha le mali or ngizoyikhokha nale mbuzi lena but kodwa ngizowushisa lo muzi ngabe-ke sakha ukulungiswa noma sakhani kuyimanje kunenye inkinga la engiyofuna ngelinye ilanga naye futhi ukhokhe khona sihlalo wami siyixoxe le yokuthi made kushona inkosi sekubekwe-ke mhlawumbe ingane le ngane ayizuthi ngena nje ibihola futhi iy'ngane akekho kungazinjani thola ukuthi manje lo nkosikazi wenkosi uzokahlalela akasatholi lutho oluza esiswini yeziziningi izinto okufuna siyikhulume siyilo mnyango ngoba uyabona thina njengoba sihleli lana sihlalele wonke umuntu walana osemakhaya ikakhulu azantu basemakhaya basenkingeni ade ngikomunye umngcwabo lapho ekhotheme khona inkosi yakakhawula into ibikhalelwa nje iyodwa ukuthi yabona njengoba seshonile sekuzolanjwa la kuthola ukuthi umama usefanele ashiye ingane ahambe manje ofuna amatoko noma engayishiyanga sekufuneka azongenwa manje yile ndoda ukuze athole ukudla ezinye izinto okufuna siyikhulume ngoba ngeke usisize ngalutho ukuhlala lana why last suka khona kube ngalungile and yabona thina abantu besifazana asikaka kuthuli obukhululeka ngiyabonga next time nje ngiyacela sihlalo wami ukuthi ukhoxa ngelinye ilanga siyomcela ke sibe nayo kanjalo omunye umnyango engiyowucela mina sihlalo ngiloka housing ke kuzoyedwa nje ozohlala la ngoba kukhona into eziningabi lana esifuna sixoxe ngazo eyithinta umuntu wesifazane sithinte indlu phansi indlela ahlala ngayo leyanto iyasiphatha kami ngoba imizi eminingi yabantu besifazane and imoda kekho ngazi ukuthi abantu basemakhaya bayahlupheka ngaphezu thathi ngona ngiuwele nabo Phoenix uye nabo Sydney bothola ama-washing ngiyabonga.
Translation. I want to touch on the issue that the Honourable Bengo has touched. There is a big problem because we don't discuss that issue and I don't see it on our agenda items. There are more problems in rural areas. And the problems in rural areas are not caused by children, the notoriety of children as it happens in townships. But in rural areas, problems are caused by livestock or cattle in particular. And you find that those cases, when have to be discussed, are taken to even donor forums, then those cases will be heard there and the determinations will be made. Those determinations will result in people having to pay huge fines. And some of the communities in such rural areas are pensioners. It becomes difficult for them to pay such fines, and if they are unable to pay fines in a form of a certain rent, because they charge them about 1,000 rand, between 500 and 1,000 rand, they will be made to pay out in lieu of the fine by goods or other livestock. And also, we don't know why Zinduna are charging so much money, because they are also receiving some stipend in a form of 7,000 or so. So there is a lot of unfairness there, particularly on the issue of women. There are no considerations in place put to safeguard the interest of women. For instance, if a chief passes on, leaves a wife and children behind, there will be no considerations to take care of that family and the wife. Instead, the family in the family of that chief would want someone to take over the wife in order to make provisions for the wife in terms of groceries and otherwise. So we really make a plea that there should be some considerations to take care of women who have lost their husbands, particularly in rural areas. We also plea, Jefferson, that our department should have a call, or rather a meeting convened together to sit with COPTA, thresh out some of the issues, because some of the issues border on the competence of COPTA. So we need them to be with us so that we can discuss these issues. And also, there is another issue that people in rural areas are required to produce a proof of residence in order for any matter you bring before them to be considered. Mama and people have got to pay a 100 rand. And we also preach a person that we also invite the Department of Human Settlement to come and have these discussions with us. I'm sorry, Chairperson, if I've left something. I've not done consecutive for a long time.
Any further questions? Suji, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to again talk about the presentation of today, just to bring the members on the report, we're at 93. The background was that
the gender commission received a complaint from the organizations that we mentioned, and that complaint was about that women candidates in the judiciary, there seems to be gender discrimination, and we investigated that case. But we didn't only investigate the case, we also made sure that we find out exactly what is happening in the judiciary. We went to the pool, we have looked at the bar council, we looked at the sitting judges, we looked at recent appointments of judges, and we were able to then map up a response to the complaints that were sent to the Gender Commission. And we therefore had to table it to Parliament as a matter of concern, that these were our findings. And therefore, all the other recommendations that I hear that the traditional courts, we have to do something with the traditional courts. I think it's something that we should note. And TCB bill is coming back again, bill is coming back. And I know that the Gender Commission has an input to that. We can resend it to the committee, just for the committee to see what was our input into the traditional courts bill. And also just to say to the members, probably our reports have a bit of a shadow report. Because if you see on the report, this is what the state and through Parliament is actually communicating to the outside world, that these are the achievements. So if you see 89%, it did come through this way, and it was accepted by Parliament as a fact. And these then become published. So from our point is that we start with what the government has already publicized and released, and then we come to our own shadow reporting. And I think that I hear the Honourable Member saying that bring more of your shadow findings in the reporting, and that we are going to try and balance that, maybe as we write our report. And then I also wanted to give you a sense of comfort that the substantive issues, even on our legal hearings, because we don't really have funding, what we do with the public, even today with the universities that we have a standard questionnaire, which is qualitative and quantitative in nature. So you will find an in-depth research from our research department, but you will find us doing a survey kind of research with our legal hearings. But the questioning will be, do you have, I'm just giving a sense that we will also ask about your child care facility. We will ask about your sexual harassment cases. We will ask about employment equity findings. Remember, Department of Labor does the Employment Equity Act report. And the Gender Commission, we take that report and we look at women, that is the gender component of it. Then we also look at, people with disabilities. What is keeping you from employing people with disabilities? And we go further in terms of looking at gender and disabilities in terms of women. So we do try to make it as substantive as possible. But I take the Honourable Member saying our report should have show that we have done that substantive work without actually going maybe as we are doing now. Kakulu would be a good research to see with my name. God of the CS, like, he powers there to Honourable Members. They are 7 months and a legal hearing. We have about 50 private companies, public companies, government departments. We are now the university as may come way to as we speak. We are both every questions Honourable Member that you have asked. Ingabani abanakekela omama nabantwana babo, ingabani aba ucwaningo nobuchwepheshe niyabunika nako omama, ingaba omama niyabanika na unyufelo, ingaba imali yabo iyalingana, ingaba ubulingana ngobulili kwi-positions eziphezulu ikhona na, zintoni ezibangela uba oomama bangafikeleli kumabakala aphezulu kule company. We do ask those questions. So we do have a report, but I hear the honorable member saying, in your reporting, make sure that you are as clear and as in-depth as possible so that we can see where the country is. And that at that point in the attack. Kwakhona bomamklande traditional inkokheli zethu traditional leaders siyaya kuzo sine buhlobo kunye nabo and ndicinga into yobana ikhona i-traditional court bill ezayo and ne-members kuzophinda siphinde si-circulate kwakhona our comments on the traditional court bill because siwenzile lo msebenzi sizophinda si-circulate kwakhona. So okwanamhlanje besijongene ne-transformation in the judiciary and sizamile into yokuba ngaba siphinde sidibane nabo sibabuze imibuzo le thina siyifumene ngokuyana bekufakwa isikhalazo kwi-gender commission. So sisikhalazo sibhaliweyo i-gender commission iye yenza ucwaningo sa-researcha safumanisa into yobana esasikhalazo sinayo into ebonisayo ukuba ngaba oomama bayabekwa ecaleni xa kusonyulwa i-judges nee-magistrates apha e-South Africa. Kodwa ke ndisifuna nje ukuninika loo report namhlanje. Siyaziva ezinye izimvo sizozithatha sizifake emsebenzini wethu sizame ukuqinisa nokwenza i-report yethu icace nangakumbi xa sizisa apha phambi kwekomiti. They are coming. I just wanted to give a sense. So, Commissioner Borda is going to give us a sense of what is happening with the judiciary. You will bring the African component to this conference. And then I think our legal officer will also give us a sense so that the committee can see the work that we are doing. And to commit honorable intent, I hear you. I won't put it on record. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Borda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that, Honourable Chair, that just to emphasize what our Chair just said, that there is, especially in the rural areas where you find that and the success rates, they differ. I mean, where I work in the Limpopo area, you go to, there are areas that they've never had water, but post democracy, they have taps in their yards. I mean, I can, probably that's part of what you're raising, that these reports must go deeper into those, because we do have in rent and fence, chapter and fence, as to, in this area, before 1994, what was the situation, and what is happening now? So that, those, I think, figures we do have. I just wanted to say that it would be remiss not to accept that there has been improvement in rural areas in terms of accessing some of the basic services. But again, it goes back to there are still challenges. But having said that, let me move. Mam Kaula, I wanted to talk about the two things that Mam Kaula raised about why is it that universities, why are the students, female students, why do they fail? And again, the chairperson has spoken to it, just for emphasis, that part of what we do, Mam Kaula, Honourable Mam Kaula, is that we when we have universities, like look at the University of Limpopo where I come from, or where I'm based, you would say to the Faculty of Law that you have X number of women who qualify as lawyers, but where do they end up in the system? Now, Honourable Kaula, there are many, many problems. He would not even answer the professor responsible for the legal school. He would not be able to answer because the system itself is, if you like, is not unfair, but also antagonistic to women. So extremely antagonistic because the gatekeepers remain men. So you would find that they would fizzle. Universities are not able to. But part of our work is to say, how does the Department of Women in the Prison also assist us when we do give these reports to say, by the department to insert higher education, so that there is a, there is this working together with us and other departments.
Can we give him time to explain the things, and then you can discuss with who you were actually now.
Thank you, Chairperson. So we are of the view that this, when we, Mam Kaula, when we table this report, on this is what's happening in the different universities. We also think that it's important for our department, the Department of Women and the Presidents, to actually even say to higher education department, or what is happening? We have this report on the CGE. What is happening? What the problems are? That for me answers somehow the question of where are the women? Do they fail? But ultimately, Honourable Kaula, it's about men remaining as gatekeepers. But let me move on, but also to talk about in the judiciary and this investigation we did, Chairperson, there's always a problem in that the absence of women gives certain judgments that you think that when you look at this judgment or even the pronouncements from the judiciary are very retrogressive. They are misogynistic in their nature. They hate women. Let me give an example. Recently, you would find BRICS sentence. Instead of being, the maximum sentence is 15 years for rape. You are getting 10 years. And you have a judge who would say, look, but this woman was not a virgin. When she was raped, so actually was not a virgin. So someone had slept with her before. As if you are justifying that act. Now it's not, Honorable Kaula, it's not only about the law, but it's also the spirit. But the spirit is, imagine what would happen. If a woman would be in the bench, possibilities are that the woman would understand the pain, the frustration of going through. So we are saying as a CGE, when you monitor these appointments, we monitor them precisely because we say it's not only enough to look at the law, but you also want to look at what is the spirit. I mean, to give an example, a judge in Redford had said that, look, a judge in Redford said that, look, this teacher, in fact, he's very honorable, and he's a first offender. We don't think that the maximum sentence would be sufficient or would actually equal crime when the teacher had raped a 14-year-old. And got a suspended sentence. So these are the discrepancies that parties, as we report ourselves, we think that Chairperson, we think that collaboration with the different, I mean, justice, correctional services, and the department and ourselves, it's going to be important, but also with labor. So I just wanted to say that for us, this report and what's happening in the judiciary is not only making us uncomfortable, but it means that 23 years into our democracy, unless there are, again to go back to our chairperson, unless there are, we know that there are consequences, unless the schools that produces law graduates would know that if we do not act in a particular manner, there are consequences. Otherwise, the status quo is going to remain the same. Thank you, Chair.
We just want to further highlight, I think, in terms of what Honorable Sandler asked, we mentioned the fact that we have a discussion document that we are dealing with, that we've come up with as the commission. And I just wanted Kerry to just give you a sense of the actual numbers, because those numbers are there. As we were asking the question, we just decided to pick some specific numbers out of the discussion documents that we'll be engaging with all the various stakeholders when we deal with this particular, or take some of the recommendations forward.
Thank you, Honourables. It's a wonderful opportunity to be here today. Actually, as the stats show, women form the bulk of LLB graduates, one. And secondly, they form the bulk of admitted attorneys. So we found that the problems or the obstacles don't lie within the actual study, the schooling environment.
Mm-hmm.
It comes post that. And you can see even the Law Society stats, most are dominated by women, besides the Law Society of the Northern Provinces, but it's quite close. You will then see how women almost fade away. We will go once again to the next slide. Even women form the bulk of members of the society. But let's look at the leadership of the society. That shows you the next slide. That are the counselors. The lighter shade is men. So we found in our investigation that there is a whole host of complex and interrelated factors. For example, the law field is very challenging. It has late nights. Women hold social responsibility. There are no childcare facilities in most law firms. Even in judges' chambers, there's no childcare facilities. The pressure, the stigma, unwritten rules. One judge, actually Judge Molamela, said in her interview that it's like a boys' club, an old boys' club. So that is where we are facing at the moment. And that's why, because it's such a big challenge, that's why we drafted this discussion document to spark engagement. We have basically used a lot of stats to say, this is the concern, what are we going to do about it? And one fact I found very interesting was the budgetary spend of the DOJ in the 2016-2017 financial year, which forms part of our discussion document, R781 million was spent on briefing advocates. So we wanted briefing advocates to appear in court on behalf of the state. 41% of that monetary spend, money in the pocket, went to African men, followed closely by white men. And if you look at the percentage, men took away 70-something percent of that budgetary allocation. So when the cliche, you put your money where your mouth is, that doesn't seem what's being done within spending patterns. And then also just to also highlight that, so I don't, there is not a great failure rate of women, and the stats show it within the LLB sector. In terms of the Civil Unions Act, the question that you posed, Honourable, is that we were very involved in the Constitutional Court case called of Dublin versus Laoshire, which spoke about the intersectionality between the Civil Unions Act and the Intestate Successions Act. And we've also applauded the recent High Court decision here in the Western Cape, which spoke about the Civil Unions Act and its intersectionality with the Alteration of Sex Description Act. In terms of the Muslim marriages matter that's before the Western Cape High Court, we are also friends of the court there, and we're very much engaged in that need to safeguard the rights of Muslim women. Thank you.
Are there any new questions? Bengu, you had your hand up.
Actually, I was raising a question to the CTE whether they have met in the Minister of Women on this issue, because I have seen it most of the time. We have seen it, the department, especially the minister, doesn't want to work together with the CTE, which is one of our entities.
And so she's in denial.
Yeah, and
may I ask that you
Just wait until she's finished what she wants. No.
Especially to give her some of the information that we have in this report. Because I think that the minister doesn't have, even though she has these reports from the CGE, but she don't even read those reports. She don't have information around the issues of that. So that is why my question is whether they have met with the minister with regards to the report that has been submitted to us. Thank you.
Are you going to answer it? Which one?
Sorry, succession and marriages. I just want to respond to that. You find that succession and marriages has become a contentious issue in South Africa. And especially when you take the recognition of succession, recognition of Customary Marriages Act.
Yes.
Now what has happened there was that we found a problem where we get the spouse who is in an existing marriage, they won't tell the spouse to get married to a subsequent marriage. I think we were involved in that case in Gunyama. And the Constitutional Court ruled that where the spouse does not inform the first spouse, the second marriage is invalid, even if she did all the... And the Constitutional Court also issued a structural interdict and told Home Affairs, you go around and inform women in customary marriages and in those communities that these are the rights and this is the development in the law. And to our knowledge, Home Affairs hasn't done that. In terms of the of Muslim marriages, in the Amod case, this is where the issue was first brought before the court. And the court had to find an innovative way to recognize Muslim marriages. But they didn't recognize marriage as such, but to recognize the duty of care for the dependent. So the marriages were not recognized. And then came the Hassam case, where the issue was, in a polygamous marriage, can the spouse and the dependent still acquire rights? And the Constitutional Court ruled, yes, there is a duty of care. So what happens is that you'll find that the problem arises where executives, where insurance companies refuse to obey the law, because the Constitutional Court has ruled that you can't take away the duty of care of dependents. And also this confusion where people cohabit and there's no contract or there's no... There's no legal recognition of that marriage or that union, so to speak. There's no marriage. Where there's no marriage, you won't have any regulation of the relationship between the parties. So you can't force X, if you're cohabiting, that he has a duty of care to support the other partner if there's a separation. But if there's a child involved, of course, there is a duty of care.
Yeah.
So all these issues become contentious because of the different judgments that are taking place. And we need to regulate it. We have a law passed in 2009, the regulation of succession in customary. I think in customary marriages, customary succession, So that law is not used often enough. So we have a problem. And as Tanda raised the question in a civil union, of course it's a legally enforced union. So if the spouse enter into it without any agreement, it's deemed to be in community property. If it's an antinatal contract, then that will regulate the duties of maintenance and so on thereafter. Hope that helps you.
Yes, thank you, sir.
I will finish off with the Women's Ministry question. I just wanted to give a thumbs up, Umama, that we we are a Eastern Cape for November on a case of your fine or condom mama, certain over and above money or cow or goat by the traditional leader. Yes, I have been again in all the layer and now put it over the So I'm trying to say that we have subpoenaed Kokta, the traditional leader, and the HOD, where a woman was fined by the traditional leader. Over and above, and the woman is has lodged a complaint that the gender commission must come and reverse the decision of the traditional leader. And we are in that case in November. That is where we are going to be. And probably maybe we should find time for the members, maybe where they can, to come and be part of our hearings and then get a sense of our questions, because even on the on this legal hearing on gender transformation, we have actually invited the Employment Equity Commission to speak there and see what is it that you want to get from their report. So I just wanted Mama to know that we also have subpoena. But I hear that you are saying to us we must do more work on the rural area. And in terms of succession, Mom, this is a succession, the polygamous marriages, we're going to come into that phase, because as you hear now, we have, the constitutional court has made some findings and judgments. So as maybe as a gender commission, we need to follow up and give awareness and see whether these things are really implemented at a large scale. This is a world again of good decision must be at my rural areas. Lama judgment to have a constitutional court about imishado. Apola boma mababani in the court, polygamous marriages, Nigella Abafmana Layo, inheritance Zaho, we call the Ubana free, okay, information to rural areas. I think you are asking us to do more, even where we have our rural areas. And I take that.
Sure. Based on what you have just actually informed us about, in this traditional court, they don't want a woman to take the stand. They just choose someone there to actually stand in for the woman. That is another grey area that we are asking CGE to actually try and rake it out. I'm an adult.
Take it.
I can talk on my behalf. I don't want some man who doesn't even know me, who has very limited knowledge of the law. Let the women defend themselves. We are adults. Please, CGE, can you work on that? Thank you. You can continue.
On representation on traditional council, they only allow men.
No, that's what I've just put everything together.
I think Commissioner Walter, because we are in the traditional space, I must honest, we went to a legal hearing, a traditional legal, because we are deployed in provinces.
Yeah.
I think Commissioner Walter will supplement that. And the women, they said to us, we know what is Ubungeno. We know. We get into these traditional marriages knowing fully well that when my husband cannot get a child, there's a subliminal expectation.
The brother.
And they said to us, we know. And they were confronting the Ngozi that is called Ungena. When the Ngozi cannot have children, there is a subliminal arrangement.
Yes.
It's a secret that the woman, the brother, will bring an heir, but the brother surely will meet only for the heir and disappear. Most of the time the brother has a wife and kids somewhere. But I'm trying to say to you, these are the intricacies of what we call our feminism. And if we use the liberal feminist view here, you won't be able to pick this, tendencies, but these are what we have to meet with in Limpopo. When we call the traditional leaders and the women were confronting their traditional leaders, telling them, ukungenwa siyakwazi, and when we get into this, we know it, we have acknowledged it, but we don't want to be raped, and the choice is ours as women. It's our voice. I look at the brothers, don't choose for me, but also please warn the brothers, I am not available. I know what I want, I'm trying to make an heir, or my husband is just, so I will choose as the tradition is saying, and I will make, and I will
produce,
and I will kick this guy to the curb. This guy must not come back. This guy must not identify me. I will identify them. You, as a traditional ghost, you have not been monitored. These people come to us at night and they choose us. We don't choose them. So I'm trying to get you to this feminism of the third wave and this whole thing that the origin, the race, and everything, but the first, the liberal feminists will say, no, don't do this. But the women themselves will come to the gender commission and say, this is the only problem that we are having with this, but we get into this knowing. So I just want you to get a sense of what the broadness of the traditional leadership thing is about. But I know that Commissioner Mbeki has been involved in some in the vocal.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to say also, in the meeting that Chairperson talks about, it was very interesting, and I think for the first time, you had women of the traditional leaders meeting.
Yes.
I don't think it has ever happened, where they met themselves, and they have an organization that, without the traditional leaders or their husband, this is what Commissioner Chairperson now is talking about, where we were there, and hearing them out what is happening. And I think it was groundbreaking, it has never happened that Honorable Kaula, that women who are married to tell us, I mean, we have, I can say to you, at the other thing, or in Zulu, but Kasa Sutubari, Kimo Sadiwa Leboni. And I don't know if that's a direct translation. Kimo Sadiwa Leboni as well. Leboni, candlelight woman. That's a direct translation, but may not give. But when they say, look, these are, which means, and they said, look, that these things, they oppress us, and part of them coming to us, there's a level of, a level of trust in the CGE. As I speak now, about a week ago, together with the previous office in Popo, there are, and in this thing we must say, there are these also successes, where you have someone within the office of the premier who directly he's a traditional leader, but he works within the premier's office, and his sole purpose is to mitigate, to be an in between when there are these fights for where women would say, but I'm entitled to take this chair as the king. And as I speak now, we have few women in Limpopo who are women who are kings as well. Well, before, you would not even talk about it. So just to say that these things are important. But Chairperson, I also wanted to say, when we were coming here, Chairperson Nare and myself were talking about this transformation in the tradition. One of the things that has happened, Chairperson, is that the Magistrate Commission has asked the Commission to come and be part of to draw up our own curriculum, to say these are things that Tifuna Nitetenga, also, so that as we lecture or train magistrate judges. But I just wanted the committee to know that imagine what would happen when the CTE is given opportunity to inform what is, because more often than not, judges, magistrates have this tendency that, look, what is it that you tell us? Because I know gender was not even understanding the nuances what the chair spoke about. So we have an opportunity now to be part of drawing the curriculum. Imagine what would happen in the College of Justice, where the CGE has said, these are things that we want you to look at as you handle rape cases, as you handle, estates, all of these things, which are important, and on a day-to-day, they impact, affect women negatively. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Ngibonga Hlalo. Ah, ikona siyazwa bathawuthi niyasho niyavumelana. Kodwa manje ufuna ukusibona kwenzeka. Okunye la bengizocela ukubuza nje. Kodwa futhi ngiyazi ukuthi uzofuna ukuthi ugcinene uthinte umnyango wakhokha because le esikhuluma ngazo ezithinta amakhaya noma amakhosi zinike kakhulu kwakhokha ngoba nina ngokwenu niyazama futhi uma ngabe ngicule ngilalela nizimisele ukuthi libone ushintsho lwenzeka phansi lakhe njengemithetho eminingi ngesigxilele emthethweni kule mthetho la ngesikhathi amakhosi asengena kwintando yeningi wayengithi kwintando yeningi la esevuma khona ukuthi azoyihola le mali ka-government. Kwaphela amakhosi manje ahlukene kabili. Khona la makhosi a-before abengaholi ebedla esizweni. Ngabe kukhona imithetho eminye okwaqhutshekwa nayo noma khona eminye kwathiwa lo sizocela ukubuyela eceleni ngoba manje sesizonikeza nayo le mali. Lakhe njengalo mthetho wokuthi inkosi ma izoshada iyakhokhela umfazi la ekhaya umkhosikazi iyakhokhelwa la egcekeni ngabe khona osebenzayo la egcekeni ngabe akekho kodwa imali iyokukhokhela ukuthathwa kankosikazi wayo ukuthi owesibili wesithathu wesingabi isiza funa sikhokhe nalo mthetho lo wokuthi uphoqe isizwe elathi njengami mina ngi-Christian I'm not ashamed. Angisho ukuthi kuwrong nokuba ushembe. Umuntu uyayishuzela inkolo ayishuzayo. Thola ukuthi isizwe sakuloo ndawo kuthiwa nge-Saturday ungayiholini. Ungawenzi umsebenzi oba ngiyigqokele iyiphandla nje mina. Awukwazi ukuhlaba Saturday. Okunye uthole ukuthi abantu ugovernment ukhona sihlelela somama sikhuluma ngendlala sikhuluma ngokuthi abantu instead of ukuthi babe nomhlaba olele kodwa ugovernment ebeyikhipha imali ukuthi bangakwazi ukuthi batshale noma mhlawumbe yabanika lo banika khona manje kodwa babe badla kodwa bekhona abakutshalayo bathola ukuthi inkosi iyabavimba labo bantu nakuleli lokuthi 1 hectare yes, uthothi ugovernment ikhiphile imali 3 million and ngebhade angikhulumi into kamzekelo khuluma ngento ekhona engakuthathwa eyibona uthothi labo bantu bamisiwe kuthiwa ngoba ayizange ivaye enkosini inkosi ayazi lutho anikwazi ukuyisebenzisa okokugcina-ke CGE yes, siyahlala silo mnyango. Ayikho into ebuhlungu ukuthi sihlale kulo mnyango sikhulume nabantu besifazane abahluphekayo. Kodwa still uthi uyathola kuyenzeka. Friday, last Friday, bekuseven ebusuku. Bengise-Phoenix. Lana thina njengoba hleli asihlalele umlungu u-India wenani, sihlalele umuntu wase-South Africa. Masuka laphayana kulanda ise Blue Bell Pali. Kunomlungu
ngo-96 owathenga indawo ePhoenix 148. Le ndawo mayayithenga wayithengela abantu, bayahlupheka abantu. Obokuhlupha kokwethu umlungu uyindiya kwanje as a leader, kodwa ongaze ngasho ukuthi yena akakwazi lokho ukuthi umlungu naye uyahlupheka nendiya liyahlupheka. Because I'm a leader, hhayi qale manje, ngiyakwazi labo bantu bayahlupheka. Bahamba labantu bathenga le nto ekuthiwa u-rent to own. From 96, laba bantu njengoba ngikhuluma nabo bengikhala dlinyembezi. Lo mlungu inde first number one indawo abakhele kuyona abantu azange isaveyo ngaphansi ukuthi inabungozi buni. Yakhiwe phezu kwamapayipi. La mapayipi ayaqhuma. Lo mlungu akasezi kubona azolungisa amapayipi. Banenkinga kagesi, akezi lo mlungu ukuza kubona. Instead of that, wena uma uthi awukhokhe waphetha usuyiqashele uplumber, waziqashela umuntu ozolungisa laba samenteni. Uyabaxosha endlini. Uma ibaxosha abantu endlini, xosha abantu imost bengabantu besifazane sihlala. Behlele emgwaqweni. La ndawo imikisile. Ngize ngaziphi ukuthi yabona abafethi uma sisazothi sami siziyi-members ePhalamend, usazosebenza ngokuthi hayi indawo zabantu abamnyama kuphela. Ezamandiya lezi, ezabelungu, kuzosho ukuthi asikakasebenzi. Ngikhuluma ngabantu besifazane, kuyimanje okuthola ukuthi bayaxosha abathi sebezamile bendandalisa imali. Bakhokhela ummeli daba zayinkantolo, even umeya ugumede uyalazi akekho osizakalayo kuleya 148. Ikhantolo yakhona le-DA. Ngifuna ukwazi-ke ukuthi bafethu njengoba sihlezi lana, yini esiyihlalelayo if our people besahlupheka ngalola hlobo phansi na? Nina nesithembisa ukuthi yini enizoyenza ukuthi lo amlungu akasitsheli ukuthi indlu okuqala labantu abanawo nje i-PTO, i-permission to occupy. And kanti leyandlu yayiyimalini ngenxa yokuthi abantu bakithi bayahlupheka balaphe. Ngicela ukuthi ningitshelele ukuthi nizosisiza ngani ukuze singenelele lapho. Ba instead of that, athi no lo mlungu uyabakhipha laba abatshinga ngaphandle wena owayo. Khona abafelokazi laphaya. Afake laba bantu laba abafakayo, ufaka seliphethe i-title, title deed.
Ayithatheke.
Umele uyamdayisele. Laba yafuna bona balo bekhokhile. Izinto lezo ngempela ezingifikisela usizi. Ngibuyele kule kaminista walo mnyango. Ngiyaphinda ngiyasho. Uyabona uminista unesono ongafuni ukusondela kuthina. Nongafuni ukusondela kunina njengoku-CGE ukuze siphambe kanye kanye ngoba lezi zinto ubona kusebenza kanjena angeke siphumele. Iyanginyanyisa noma iyangiqasula indaba ukuthi lokuthiwa ngu-honorable sizohlala la sizokhuluma la still uma uthi ubuyele emuva kunenkinga. La bantu kuyimanje i-advocate ufuna lo daba ulibuyisele e-court. Ufuna 50,000 bazithathaphi le mali abantu ngoba nosebenzayo uthola ukuthi umama kuphela ubaba kekho nobaba okhona iy'mali azikho. Ngiyabonga.
Lo mmeli uthi ufuna 50,000 ngoba kufanele ahambe ayeka special planning ezothola ukuthi lo mlungu wayeyirejistile le nkampani yakho yokuthi uzokwakha izindlu. Two, ubani wamnikeza umhlaba? Three, ubani?
Ugogo wakhe.
Okuphi ugogo? I-Phoenix uyayazi ukuthi kwakuyi-mix area. Kodwa ngoba nawo kamandiya ayingasafuni ukuhlala nathi. I'm not fighting you, my friend. They were very segregative. Most of them are not Hindus. So a Hindu couldn't stay there in that particular plot. Segregation is across the color line. But ummeli umuntu.
Sorry, Chef. Angathiwa kuvelanga ukuthi ummeli wani. And into ekhona nje kuyimanje khona abanothisa ukuthi befanele baphume izolo. I mean Sunday. ase kuthiwa baphuma endlini izindlu zidayiselwe abantu akwazi onto bazobekwazi.
Where's the counselor?
Even imeya ugumezingabazomdaba abantwenzi lutho.
No, the thing is the matter will have to go civil case, yeah, a civil court, and then sebethole information yokuthi the first question ubani wamnika loya mhlaba.
I think just on a, because we are also a constitutional body with three lawyers, I think we should talk after the hearing. You give us the case. If the gender commission cannot do it, we will take it to a human rights team in the public sector. Because they, I mean, they can get an interview for the people to say, meantime, all these things are being resolved.
Mm.
So, Mama, that we can.
It doesn't matter.
So I think there is a law to do that. And you know, the chapter 9 has three lawyers, we must do some work for the community. So we will appreciate if we get a great meeting. Can be,
yeah. Kini uqhoko senkopheni hayi khube kwena baba
a chairman izothi I'm not sure if kunideka I don't think kunideka is translation because you know you check ubambi ngesiji ilandwe. But what I wanted to ask over and above the question about the meeting of CGE with the minister, I don't think that has been answered yet. But when they're answering that question, could they also, or maybe I should ask a general question like saying, I know the answer to meetings between the CGE and the department, because we've just been told that it is happening. CGE is actually interacting with the department. But what I'm not sure is what responses they get, you know, from those departments. And if there are responses, how would it be, Chair, if we could get those responses? Just to know, because we're asking questions here, not only today, meetings before, we have asked questions. And CGE has actually committed themselves, undertaken, that they have undertook to do something about the question. But I would really like to know what enjoyment, what did they enjoy with the department and after the sessions have been responded to, and after the questions, their questions and concerns have been addressed. If you could get that kind of report, I would really appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Trevor.
I just wanted to ask what is happening to CGE on the national gender policy framework, because we need something that is going to compel each and every person to comply, and we should have time frames So I'm not sure if they are preparing a national policy that is going to force everyone, because who will come back complaining all the time that this one is not doing what we want them to do and all that and all that. But we don't have a policy that that is overarching, that that forces compliance on each and every person that we are doing monitoring on. But I want us also to go back to the issue of the law societies. And you were saying the admission of women, there was a large number. The admission to law society, all that admission being just happening, because the law society also has advocates. Do you call it admission or whatever? I'm not sure of the law, the language that you use in law, what is it? But I don't think that there are many women in that law society, because you remember it was a boys' club. And that boys' club has not changed. And you even complain about working hours. It is the same like the medical field. The working hours for women on doctors is 36 hours, and which is unreasonable. That is why there was that case where a woman drove and got an accident, and yeah, a doctor got an accident. So it means that we must challenge the structural pattern of that particular sector. Not only that sector, there are many male sectors that we have allowed women to go in. And the sad part is that women who are in those sectors are not fighting against the working hours. It's like they are frozen. It's so funny, because I was talking to my daughter about the law society. She is an attorney. But we were saying, what is your responsibility as the women that are affected in that particular sector? Because we have fought for your rights to be in that particular sector. But your responsibility is to change the working hours, the working condition, and the way you are addressing the issues, like women that get harsher sentences, that has first offenders. The first offenders that are women get harsher sentences, and they are thrown into jail. In jail, you must also separate a prisoner. That is another section we're not talking about. When you are a murderer, you should not be mixed with people who are not men, like people who have done small crimes. And because at the end of the day, the hardcore criminals end up forcing those ones with small crimes to be like them, because there is no separation of offenses even in jail. So that is another thing we must also talk about. And go to the health sector, where nurses and doctors, their working conditions are not gender sensitive. The last time I raised the issue of bus drivers, you have not addressed them. The issue of bus drivers, municipalities forces women to come to work at 3 o'clock. And even, you must also address women managers, because they are the ones who are supposed to pull women into leadership, and they're not doing it in government and also in private sector, because they got jobs on the basis that we created a policy. But when they are supposed to lift other women, they are not pulling those women to the positions that they are supposed to be pulled by them as women. Those are some of the things that you must also address. I mean, last week you talked about women oppressing other women. That is one thing where women are not doing their best to ensure that other women come into that male-orientated sect. I mean, why do we still have a problem when we have so many lawyers that are qualified to even be pulled to be judges for that matter? You still have male judges that are African and white. It can't continue that way. those women, the masipas, must ensure that they get their act together. We got them there. We got them there. Judge masipas. I'm saying the masipas and them must ensure that women go into that field.
Women oppress each other.
Women oppress each other.
And then that you'll come after her.
Thank you. The question I wanted to ask came a long time ago, so it may not seem sort of relevant to what we've been talking about, but I do seem to think I heard you saying that you would like to invite us to attend some of these hearings. And I think that would be helpful to us. Yes, but not sort of within tribal areas. I know we've been to the universities and we sat in on something with University of Pretoria and so on. But I think also, could I ask that the invitations come not only to the WIP or to the management, but to all of us individually? Because sometimes we could go, you know, not as a group, but just as an individual who happens to have the time available. I met with some people over the weekend, and they were complaining about the fact that they didn't get access to Parliament, and that they couldn't speak at committees or come and do presentations, whether it was ours or others. And I was surprised at that, because we are meant to be open. And I also heard that there had been invitations to members, but that it had been turned down by the committee. Now there again, I just want to appeal that we allow individuals to make choices, so that even if the committee as a whole can't go, but I have the ability and I'm free at the time and I want to be there, that we are all given a chance to interact as much as we can and to see for ourselves what is going on. Thank you.
Can I answer you?
Yes.
Invitations are sent to everybody who is a member of this committee. But I'm going to be talking to you direct, as a person we've worked with for a long time. There are times when you neither respond, and when I see you after coming back, you had another appointment. We don't segregate people. I want that to be clear. And you should know how we work. But for people coming from outside, I don't know. This is news to us as members of this committee. And apart from that, who are they? You know, who are they? Was the request forwarded to the committee, or they just spoke to someone else? That's another thing. We have to follow procedures in whatever we do, but we don't segregate. Okay. Thank you. Yes, sir.
It's just that I'm not sure if CGE is still busy answering questions. If
You'll be the last one. And they've answered quite a lot. It's just a few that are outstanding.
The unanswered questions, like the minister's meeting with them?
Yes,
coming to you. Oh, okay.
Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted, before the chairperson talks directly to some of the ministries, that if you look in this particular report, for instance, this particular report, you will see that some of the annexes here are specifically letters that we get from departments. And I think it would be interesting as well for members of this committee to also look into the annexes, because it also, to a greater extent, gives you a sense of, you know, how departments also interact in the Commission for Gender Equality. At this stage, I'm going to just limit you to the gender transformation, but if you really look, we have put them deliberately in here, the responses that they've given us, because you will see, we do report and we do engage on a quarterly basis when we come with programs and highlight, you know, some of the difficulties that we sometimes have with some of the departments. So depending on the work that we do and on the issues that we get, sometimes we do not sort of get the joy that we have. It will be interesting. Look at the letter that we received from the previous Minister of Justice, for instance, before he went to be the Minister in the Presidency, when we were asking specific questions around transformation within the judiciary. You know, the kind of responses that we get there sometimes leaves a lot to be desired. I will leave it at that, but you look at the letter. Thank you. Ii-letters zithatha ixesha ukuphendulwa zii-departments. The departments take their own sweet time or they don't reply at all. Uthi ke ngoku besithi honorable member like we should subpoena the women's ministry. So I'm saying to her, you know, when you have we have worked with women organizations and women and women. Mm-hmm. So when they see the first subpoena, the first thing that they are going to say is that there goes women against women. And we always try and persuade the minister. I will tell you that yes, you are right. It takes for the minister to respond to our letter, we want Masfunu Kulumanai. It takes maybe 9 months.
What?
1 year. Well, the last time we met with the minister, we still had a chairperson who showed.
Yes.
That was 2 years, maybe 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
The last meeting, the meeting that we had now with her, was we only got one meeting this year with her. I just want you to give a sense of when we present our report. We presented our report on the gender machinery and the fact that we are worried that it has collapsed. The national gender framework, the minister's response has been that since she came, Commissioner Porta, you will remember, since she came, she said the national gender framework, she's still reviewing.
Yeah.
So she cannot use it. It was unfinished business.
Yeah.
Now remember, National Gender Framework has been there for a long time. We've been using it. That's why we have offices in the Premier's office. We have the status of women. Remember when there was still the president was Thabo Mbeki. It was the National Framework that was very active. That's why we were able to establish the women's gender focus system, the women's machinery in the provinces voted by premiers, that was coming from that direction. The gender commission is coming from the gender framework also. But the minister said, no, no, she's going to look at it, she's going to review it. Obviously, the gender violence in the country, we keep on saying to the women's minister, this is a crisis. The women's demand, the minister came back to us, we produced a report that if we can handle each gender violence, if we can make it a national priority, just like we are dealing with the HIV and AIDS,
mm-hmm.
So then a council here to even a deputy president, or just like we do with skills, that's like we do with HIV and AIDS, to give it that way. We are putting the crisis list in Lanai. The response has been direct. That this is not a crisis, it's a challenge. And two, the Secretary coordinating structure, if you remember that body, the minister has said he's applying with my team. She first was appointed, she said she was thinking about it, she's still thinking about it. It has not been implemented. And I want to say that the NGOs, every time they see her, they go and want to protest where she is.
because they are asking, this is a crisis, why don't you red flag it as a crisis, make that coordinating structure to work. Now what we have done, as the gender commission, informally, we make sure that there is a platform to talk about gender violence as a gender commission, but the state has not taken that initiative. And that is what we are experiencing. So if we are subpoenaing him, there's so much to talk about. But again, if that women against women fighting, and we are trying to minimize that friction. And I want you to know what was the response there. They did their own endeavor. They are having, now they go born. We have done the research for them. We went, we have findings, NGOs have given even what is happening in rural areas, what is happening. The minister chose to do for herself and go back to the community. So that's what she is doing now. She's saying she's talking to the people there.
Which community?
The people must. Yes, it's called dialogue. Community dialogue. Nothing but the repetition of the research, but also what the civil society has been calling her and talking about, but she has opted to do it with her budget, that same work. So this is what we are talking about in our relationship. We are trying not to make this a national crisis, that you have a gender commission that is not speaking to the women's ministry in the way that we should be seen to be working together. The last time we met, she explained to us that each gender commission, the mandate, we are following the mandate of the women's ministry. So there must be clarity from the president, but which one must be closed?
Which one?
The gender commission.
Oh, the chapter 9.
Women's ministry.
Bala.
Wasting money.
In Monday, I'm trying to give you a sense of the difficulty in the relationship, but we don't want to make it a national crisis.
We've already said it must be closed.
Can I please? How we have been seeing this was that probably even the amalgamation process is fueled by this non-clarity from their side of the gender commission and the women's ministry. And I feel that maybe government, on the other hand, is putting pressure on the women's ministry that probably we are not doing anything, and they will say, no, it's because the gender commission is doing our work. So it's a chicken and egg situation, and it shouldn't be like that. We are a watchdog. We are not in the government. So there has been that pressure, and maybe we said to ourselves, maybe that's why we struggled for 9 months to get a chairperson. SABC is through. And we struggled to get the commissioner that you appointed a long time ago. And we said, okay, maybe SABC is pressure. Maybe that's why there's a response now that we eventually, after 9 months, we have a chairperson after having two acting chairs in the commission, which is something that affects the governance of the institution. So there are those challenges, but we are trying to have a Maukuti, Nyatelele Pansi, and try and come to the committee, maybe to mediate with the camp. But as a we are just like NGOs fighting with the minister, and then they are fighting to close the ministry. That is not our purpose. So as a gender commission, so we are trying. We are putting it diplomatically to you. There is still it's a challenge for us. We don't need Bala. We don't need the women's ministry. We are Bala. This is the challenge to Bala. We are telling you that we are not going to Bala. We are Bala. We can go to the corridor. The police are coming
and
getting Bala.
You get a chance.
We are going to ask the Bala. In other provinces, I must be honest, there are departments that work with the gender commission. When they see that they are employment equity doesn't foster women, they come back. Even the premier of Gauteng has actually instructed all the HODs, I think 50-50 now, but they have to work with the Gender Commission to improve the training and capacity building for women, but also community safety. Even now with the education, 67 children that were raised, 87, they have come to the Gender Commission to work with them and the human rights. Even in Sinti, all the provinces, they vary in how. But we are going to have to do something about it. Well, sometimes it indicates the MEC when we don't see women. And then we will hear, no, MEC so and so. We all the Nikumbi, and these people must be employed. So the HOD doesn't have anything to say because these people are came with the MEC and they happen to be all male. Now we're fighting with the HOD. So there has been in higher education has worked with us on the sexual harassment policy. That is why now we also meet with them directly in the universities because they have a sense of autonomy. So we call the higher education to come and report on their own on gender transformation. And I must say again, the universities are working with us because we do handholding every year or every other 2 years. They come back and they say to us, we have improved here and we have not improved here. So, ukusebenzisana kwethu nabantu ngeziphumo zomsebenzi wethu iyohlukahluka but ngingatsho kuni ukuthi i-women's ministry we are having Commissioner Boda as long as you agree with me here that we are having huge challenges but we are working. We have decided as a General Commission we are going to do our watchdog work. And if she can't call the Minister Department, we go directly to them, you know, using our powers. And the departments, some of them, most of them have responded, they come to the Gender Commission without the Women's Ministry. So maybe at some point she was saying we must have been at the Women's Ministry and ask what are you doing, Women's Ministry? And maybe we'll come to that point. Maybe as we have said now, these are the challenges for that, you know. That these are the things that we are encountering. So I wanted to also say to the members, the research among the traditional leaders, so that report is yet going to come back, which means stopping another bigger debate on the rural areas and the work that we are doing.
I think what I wanted to raise was that there's a difference between the women ministry and the CGE, and that difference is blaring. It is unfortunate that there are people that are saying that before the ministry was established, the women, the Gender Commission was established. It was established for those reasons that it had to monitor gender issues. But the women ministry is the department that has to work for women and ensure that all departments mainstream gender issues within the state. And the commission has to monitor even the gender ministry, all departments, including the gender ministry, if they are in line with empowering women generally. That is the responsibility there in the constitution.
But you know.
So, and the sensitivity of the chair, so the chair is very sensitive. She's even sensitive when I'm protecting her, when they were talking about that they must be removed. The chair must be able to subpoena the women ministry without delay, because it took them 3 years to subpoena the department. and they have subpoenaed other departments that have refused to come and talk to them. So if they could do it to other departments, they must do it to them and find out what are they doing, what have they done, and all that, and all that, and give a report to Parliament, because they account to Parliament as a Chapter 9 institution. That has nothing to do with women fighting against women.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was the former chairperson Shozi who was supposed to subpoena the women's ministry, he should have done that, you know, as a responsibility that is there in the constitution. Because the longer we delay to empower women, the more problems we will encounter. So, and all these things that are in here, in their books, you know, if you read through all the facts that are there in the CGE reports, all those facts compel them to go to that ministry and demand to see certain progress that has been done by the department. So if I'm wrong, you should tell me, for how long should we sit here and wait that women must be empowered when we have identified three things that affect women: poverty, inequality, and unemployment. Those three things, all the departments are not showing us statistics that shows they are reducing those things among women. All departments, you can name them, but the department that is supposed to monitor that and mainstream it and ensure that each and every department put gender even in the budget, the gender responsive budgeting has to be monitored by this department so that those three things are addressed among women. So we will apologize until we go to our grave, Mara.
Chair, quick three things. First of all, the chairperson would not have been appointed had it not been for my questions to the president, because that appointment followed very quickly. Secondly, Madam Chair, we have the power to summon the minister to this committee. I've seen her twice this year. Twice. She doesn't care. She doesn't pitch. And I think that perhaps we should extend an invitation for every meeting we have to provide an account to this committee. And cabinet meetings are for Wednesday mornings, not for Tuesday mornings, and she must make every effort to attend here. Thirdly, in one of our previous meetings, ma'am, we as a committee, we requested and I suggested that the researchers actually draw up a list of the AG findings and the committee recommendations, and that we submit that to the Department of Women and the Presidency. And instead of them deciding what they are going to present to us, we give them a list of things that they must report to us, so that they don't come here and spend 9:30 to 12:30 giving us a presentation that we're not interested in and don't answer our questions. Rather, we submit and tell them, what do we want to know? Where are you on this issue? And then they have to come to us every time and report back. And we also said that we want to get the Auditor General to provide us quarterly feedback on where the department is with regards to those findings and recommendations. So I just want to remind the committee secretary, researchers, content advisors, support, please at the next committee, through you, chairperson, can we have that list prepared? What are we as a committee going to tackle this department on so that we can make sure that we engage? Perhaps we can extend the invitation to the minister, and I'm glad I managed to get you appointed.
Is that why you wait for Jesus coming?
Chair?
Yeah, okay.
Chair, I haven't been in this committee a long time. And if the committee wants to take drastic action, on the minister, I would ask humbly, ask the committee for CGE to provide us, because I haven't got evidence in my bag or in my file for all what is being said here. And I, at the same time, I would like the committee not to go ahead with the decision in to implement the decision of the committee about summoning the minister. How I wish, Chair, we could have something, because I would like us to say the minister is not cooperating. The minister is doing that and not that. He's doing this and not that. Without actually having something that tells me that, and then I'm very much comfortable to actually second or support whatever action should be taken in as far as the minister is concerned. Thank you,
Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Chair, it's covered me with the issue of the difference between the CGE and the Women Ministry. But I want to say that we used to say it in this portfolio committee that we always have a concern with the duplication of work between the ministry and the CGE, especially on the issue of the CGE. We know that CGE is doing its legal clinic around the country. And now the department is having its community dialogue around the country also. And even though we have had the information that at the moment there are challenges, that the ministry is unable to continue with those community dialogues. But I would say that, Honorable Chairperson and members, you know, we have put the pressure on the department to say wherever we go, as the portfolio committee and other portfolio committees, women on the ground are complaining that they don't know anything about this department. You know, so women's issues that are supposed to be taken out by this department are no longer being able to be done by this department. That is why I was saying that when the minister was coming out with an issue to say that they are going to the community just to make sure that the communities do know about this department. But the issue is around the way they are doing it is the same as the ones that is done by the CGE, which is looking at those issues. People will come out with the different issues, they raise them. CGE has legal advisors, the department they don't have legal advisors, and what happened is that when the people are raising, when those women are raising their issues, the CGE is able to take them up. But what is happening with the department doesn't even go back and give them the feedback around the issues that have been raised. So I think also on the issue of how are we going to see this department doing? We thought that this department is smart ledgers to monitor and evaluate other departments. But what we have found out is that we used to ask the minister, that is, minister, are you working together with other ministers at the cabinet level on these issues? Because when you talk of responsive budgeting, do you know exactly what is happening to other departments? Nothing. Do you know what other departments are doing with gender focal points? Nothing. So that is where our problem is with the minister. And also to say that we don't want this department to be closed down. We want this department to work. That is why the failure of the department is the failure of us as the members, because us is to oversee that the department is doing what it's supposed to do. So I'm just saying to the CGE that the CGE should continue do their tremendous work that they are doing, because what you are doing at CGE now is what is the work of the department, you know, to go down to the communities to get those challenges that the people are facing in this country. And also to say to the CGE, you must continue your work as you are doing. We will, as this portfolio committee, to make sure that we oversee this department, and we are going to put pressure on them to deal with these challenges that are facing the women. Especially because when it comes to, we are now going to have a debate on 60 days of activism, you know, in November, you know. Maybe next two weeks we are going to have this debate. But the problem is that the department should give us what has it done to make sure that people are getting awareness. People do know that if they are having problems, this is where they are supposed to run to. We want, even now we are talking about the report on the justice, transformation of justice, but we don't hear anything from the Department of Women, whether they have monitored all those. That is why I was asking whether this report has been taken to the minister, you know. And their response now is that, no, actually this ministry is not working together with CGE. And we know that the minister doesn't work with the CGE. Mm. That is why we always ask her, even when we meet at a political level, we used to ask her, that minister, you must work with the CGE. With CGE, we have only one entity, which is the CGE. So why other ministers have 9, 8 entities under their department, but they're able to work all together with them. But what about us? Just only one CGE, and we failed to work with CGE. But actually, I'm just saying to CGE, keep on doing your work. We will oversee the department. Thank you very much.
Chair, maybe what I've just raised and what I've just asked for is a bit too much, because a lot has been done by the portfolio committee and by CGE. Maybe again, I should rephrase my request and ask for minutes, because I think that is what would help. That would help us. That would enable us to actually be as of assistance to CGE. I'm not sure. Maybe we are minutes are being submitted, and an old man, I'm not reading them, the minutes after the meeting. But if I'm correct, then I apologize. But if the minutes of each and every meeting that we sit, we haven't been receiving them, where we could actually make follow-up by way of assistance in line with reference to the minutes of the previous minutes, then I think that will get us somewhere. If that's going to be responded to affirmatively, I would say those minutes should include today's meeting, and then I'm sure we'll be able to move forward and action what we are supposed to be action as a committee. I know we're not going to be, we're unable to do actually be hands on, but we'll be able to do our oversee correct and properly and in an effective way. I don't know. Maybe I'm out of order, but if I'm not, let's action it. If I am, then let me be corrected. Thank you.
Honorable member, minutes are being distributed, but just check which minutes you have, and then I'll ask. I'll make a request that you are finished with those data methods, okay? But at the same time, as Ubengu spoke strongly, and Honorable Chwewu as well, there's always an end to everything that you start. The problem started with the programs being chucked out without any notice, and when we posed questions, we became enemies, which pushed us to an extent. I actually said she must take her bag and her stuff out of our meeting. And the second time, it was not this horrible Tandi, it was Ubengu.
With our support.
That's what I'm saying. The thing is, we've tried all sorts of tricks. After all, ngabantwana belokishi, we know how to spin the coin. No change. Guys, we might have to go to the president and start.
What?
Thank you. Can we adjourn?
Away.
Before we exchange blows.
We're all in amity.
I'm going to go to the next one.